Some electronic daddy. And maybe we should say Shechayanu for me at least. I think I was here a long time ago. Okay. They told me as a Rosh Hashiva that some girls want to have connection with Rosh Hashiva. Not bad, a good Torah teacher. The title of Rosh Hashiva doesn't make you so much greater than anybody else. But fine. No. So basically, I'm looking for questions so I can just talk about what your concerns are. But we call the topic Contemporary Issues Facing Modern Orthodoxy. But I really wanted to talk about issues facing you, the women here at Stern College. Now, so first of all, I want to just preface that it's my own perspective. I'm not representing anybody. And you take it for whatever you feel. So we're in a school, Torah Mada. So by definition, we're confronting, or we're involved with the Torah world and the outside culture. So there's a positive side, and there's also the challenging side. So I imagine we'll talk about the challenging side. I didn't come down to just talk about the positive side. So on the positive side, obviously, we're learning Torah, and I happen to be the person who believes in Parnassa on the Mada. I wrote an article about it about 5-6 years ago in Hamavasa. Big article about, even though I have a PhD in engineering, and I was a college professor at City College. I taught mathematics, and I did other things with my PhD. But I look at it as panasa, as a way of making a living in today's world, and I'm not looking at it as a way of, some people feel it's it opens you up to different ideas and broaden your horizons and personal self-development. To me, I can see it for people, but I don't see it really for too many people, because it just takes so much time. Learning Torah takes so much time, and developing your midos and your mitzvos. The Torah side takes so much time. There really is no, I don't see much time to do anything else except for Panasam. You have to make a living so far. But to say I want to develop my horizons, my personality from the foreign culture, I can see it happening, but I think it just takes too much time away from the Torah, which is really our focus. Now, some people were able to do it. My great Rebbe, Rabbi Soloveitchik, did it. And recently, Rabbi Lichtenstein, his son-in-law, was able to do it. He passed away. But not too many others. I mean, I've been around in Yeshiva University for about 50 years. In the 50 years, I don't think I can count more than maybe two hands worth of fingers. People, I would say, became great in Torah and great in Mada. So it's not that many people over 50 years, figure every year 500 students times 50, how much is that? 25,000 people. So out of 25,000 people that more or less came through this institution over the last 50 years, maybe there are 10 you could say did Torah Mada according to the theory and the ideal of being a great Torah scholar and a great intellectual. Very few people. Some people become great intellectuals, and some people become great Torah scholars, but a combination of both is very, very rare. So, because it only really is doable if you're a fantastic genius, so you can do things very quickly in terms of your thinking. Most of us are not that level of genius. takes a long time to think things through when I'm studying. Whatever it is, Torah or mathematics or biology, takes time. You can make Jews a prank, but not super geniuses. A super genius comes through once, I don't know, once every 5 years, once every 10 years. That's why you can count it on the fingers of two hands, people who do both to that level. So that's why I'm a more practical kind of a fellow. And for me, Torah Mada is Panasa, Torah and Panasa. Okay. So that's a positive. You get a Panasa, it's a very big positive, it's very important. And as you go through it, you can do Kiddush Hashem, because if you're going to work, if we're going to work outside in America, let's say, or even in Israel, wherever you work, you're going to be meeting people who are not religious, not even Jewish. And if you behave properly, and people say, oh, this person's ethical, moral, nice, friendly, concerned, so you make a Kiddush Hashem, that's a big mitzvah. Biggest mitzvah, maybe. So, definitely great positive things in Torah Mada. So for me, the two great positives are the Parnassa part and the Kiddush Hashem. However, the intellectual part for me is nothing. Basically, it's nothing, because I don't see how it's going to be done. Okay, this is after a PhD and many years as a college professor. Okay, now I want to talk about challenges that we have. And I want to talk a little bit about the challenges which women have. Okay, we're obviously Torah Jews, and we're also living, and working in a non-Jewish culture, different world. Okay, one of the big issues, and I think I'll start with that one, especially with women, is tzniut. Okay, tzniut is a major issue in terms of Torah Mada and being going into the outside world. Okay, there are certain halachot. There's halacha, and the basic rule is when halacha clashes with something outside halacha. So generally speaking, you would say halacha would win. So let's say halacha keeps Shabbos, and as a job, I could get give me a $25,000 raise in my salary, but it requires me to work on Shabbos. So then clearly, we're not going to let a person work on Shabbos to make more money, even though around the year 1900, 1910, 1920, millions of Jews who came from Europe to America decided to work on Shabbos to make Parnassa, but they were wrong. They were wrong. They gave up halacha for Parnassa. They were wrong. And the result of that fatal mistake is that today, 80-90% of those people's grandchildren, great-grandchildren, are intermarried and not even Jewish. Their children won't be Jewish. I mean, their intermarriage rate is astounding. It's all from that original decision that the millions of immigrants to America made back in 1900, 1910, to give up halacha for panasa. Those few who didn't, who said, I'm keeping Shabbos no matter what the price, their great-grandchildren are from Jews today. So we know from history that you don't. You do not. And halacha for panasa. So for us, it's not today, I don't think it's today really a question of Shabbos anymore. Thank God we don't have that issue. But there are other issues for women, especially the issue of tzniut is a very big issue. Okay, the dress styles over these 50 years that have been around have become less and less and less sneers, more and more preachers. And you can't say that this halacha does not exist. There is a halacha of sneers, a very specific halacha. And to say, well, I need to dress a certain way which is would be against halacha, in order to get a job, panasa, I'd be not allowed to. Don't say that I bend halacha for panasa. That's a basic rule. Okay, now, having said that, that's the basic rule. We're going to keep halacha and give up on panasa. Now, first of all, that's what the Torah tells us, period. We don't have a choice. Second of all, we have betachon, that Hashem, who gives the blessings of panasa, will give us panasa when we keep halacha. So we believe, and we have already millions and millions of Jews who have kept halacha and make panasa. Okay, so the Hasidim, when they came to America around the year 1950, all the previous Jews who were here, even the religious Jews, my Orthodox, said they can't wear beards and payas in America and have panasa. No one's going to hire them. The Goyim are going to boycott their stores. They must take off their beards and payas. Like every rabbi almost in America around 1950 was clean shaven. Even the rabbis didn't have beards. They only wore sometimes a goatee, because a goatee looked like had a German look. Was an intellectual college look, but they didn't wear beards as religious things. Here you have these people with payas and beards. Everyone said they're not going to have panasa. Okay, fast forward from 1950 to today. Some of the richest Jews in America, Hasidim, every chassid has a job, makes panasa, their stores and every business. B&H is the biggest store selling electronics in the nation, maybe the world. And so on and so forth. The biggest real estate magnet in America and New York City is a chassid. He just put a bid on Empire State Building for about $2 billion. So the chassidim have proven that they can keep their tznius, their dress code, and they get their panasa. So it's a false argument for people to say, oh, I have to give up on tznius to get panasa. Let's say a woman has to dress certain ways, which is against the law, otherwise I'm not going to find a job. It's absolutely false. It's manish fools. It's not a claim. So the idea of, I don't know how many times that people talk to the women here about sneers, but it's a mitzvah for women, a special mitzvah. And you should feel good about it. You know, you should really feel good about it. It's your mitzvah. There are certain mitzvahs given to women, like lighting candles Friday night, having babies. So being tzanua is your mitzvah, and you should feel good about it. You know, you can do it. And if it's hard, so be it. I just gave a speech the other day about how the Rav, who was my Rebbe, Rabbi Soloveitchik, said he believed in always taking the hard road in Judaism. If he had a choice between an easy way of doing something and a hard way, he said he prefers the hard way, because with the hard way you gain something. So he believed in the hard and way of doing it, because he said it gets you, makes you greater, it builds up your spirituality, it gets you to higher levels of Tveikas Bashem, of connecting to Hashem. If you do things, you struggle. It's like a football player, if he works out and he lifts 500 pounds, he's going to be a better football player than if he lifts only 300 pounds. The 500 pounds is very hard for him. He's going to almost collapse, but it's going to make him really strong. Same thing the Rav used to say with Torah and mitzvahs. If you do the hard thing, it makes you stronger, it makes you better. That's what you're here for. Don't shy away from it. You know? Do it, and then you'll see, you'll accomplish, you'll feel good about it. Feel good, I did the hard thing. So for the women, sneeze is their mitzvah, and it develops an attitude. It's an inner attitude. It's not just a question of a dress code. It's an inner attitude of having an inner focus rather than an external focus. You know, the pritzus, attitude is very shallow, it's very external, not what makes me attractive to other people. The tsanua is what makes me attractive to Hashem, which is a deeper connection than what do people say about me. A big problem in this world, and especially in this culture, is we're so into appearances, what will people say? Everything is so much motivated by that. We're living in a world of PR. What's my public image? What do people say about me? What do they say about me on Facebook? What do they say about me on Twitter? That's what people are worrying about. But that's not the Torah attitude. The Torah attitude is, what does Hashem say about me? I don't care about people, really. Not that much. Certainly not nearly the way this society operates. So, working with the laws of tznius basically is an attitude which gets a person closer to Hashem and less concerned about what public opinion says about me, which is always going to be healthier. Okay, that's one thing I want to talk about. The second thing I want to talk about is also something with the culture that we live in. But the problem of jealousy is a very big problem. People are jealous. This society breeds jealousy. Someone has a bigger house than me, someone has more money than me, someone has more boyfriends than me. People become jealous. Now, jealousy is a very deep problem because we see in the Torah that almost the very beginning of time, the second sin that the Torah talks about is Cain kills Hevel because Cain was jealous about Hevel. And Hashem tells Cain, he tells him, why are you so upset? You can do good things. You're not talking about what the other person has. Just do good things. Hashem gives everybody what they're supposed to get. If someone's supposed to have more money than me, okay. If someone's more popular than me, okay. It's all from Hashem. He gives people different qualities, different talents, different situations, and it's fine. I got my situation, I have my blessings, and I'm supposed to live with my blessings, appreciate them, asameach b'chelko, happy with what we have. Asameach b'chelko. And really, I think that this is a very prevalent problem which I see among the boys, and I imagine it's among the girls. There's a lot of jealousy. People are talking all the time, oh, he got an A, I got only a B. He got an interview with such and such a company, I didn't get the interview. So much chatter, I walk around, I hear all this chatter, people comparing themselves to other people. And usually, someone is a winner and the other person is a loser. And that's really such a... It's very unfortunate that this is what's on people's minds, the way they look at life in comparison with others. If someone gets more, so be jealous. It's just very sad because it has so many bad damage. It creates so much damage in a person's life. The person is jealous of others. You have to work very, you want to strive to be sameach b'chelkeinu. Everyone should be satisfied with what they are, to feel good about what I am, irrespective of what others are. It goes back to that sneeze point that you have that inner focus. What do I have? What did God give me? Not to look at what other people have. There will always be people having more things than me, always. Am I going to be the richest person in the world? Am I going to be the most beautiful girl in the world? Am I going to be the most lively, bubbly person in the world. I mean, it's ridiculous to think like that. What did Hashem, God, give me? And I'm so happy what He gave to me. First of all, He gave me health. I'm healthy. I'm not in a hospital. I'm not handicapped. I walk around. I can jump. I can. So good. So I'm happy. Have health. I have a good mind. I got to college. I'm able to learn Torah. I'm learning Parnassa. Wonderful. Have some good friends. That's it. What more does a person want? I mean, I don't understand why people would let themselves be sucked into this kind of a trap. It's a trap. It's really a satanic from the Satan. He's trying to trap us and to look at the negative in our situations. Look at the negative. Oh, that guy has something. This girl has something. I don't have it. It's a satanic trap. It takes us away from Simcha. Simcha, Sameach Chelkein. We have what we have, what I have, God gave me. And everybody can find in their situation things to be happy about. So, and I have to say that it's a huge problem that's so strong in the outside culture. The American culture, wherever you go, it just broadcasts jealousy. All the advertisements are based on that. If someone has this, you should get it. The advertisements, the culture, everything is this. Not to be happy with what we have. We need more. That's what they keep on broadcasting. That's why America has a very, very high suicide rate, an incredibly high rate of depression, clinical depression. I don't know the number. I don't want to say the wrong number, but it's huge. I think it's over 50% of American adults at some point in their life have a clinical depression. That's unbelievable. Really is. I saw the number, I was just blown away. Where does it come from? It's the richest country on the planet. The average person here never asked about food, like many other countries. Everybody here has clothing. Almost everybody here has access to a car. Most people in the world don't have any of these things. Why are we the most depressed country in the world? The answer is because we broadcast jealousy. Jealousy makes people upset, and jealousy will create depression eventually. Eventually, a person will be depressed. It's a clinical thing. It just does something to a person's brain. It clicks a certain button at some point, and boom, they need antidepressants. They're in hospital. Shock therapy. Whatever these people go through, never. It's all a result of the culture. The culture pushing all the time. You don't have this. You must get it. You don't have that. And other people have it, why don't you have it? See that day in, day out, year after year? At some point, 50%+ of people snap. So we have to work at this meter against the outside culture, really against the outside culture. And whatever you hear in the school, I mean, in fact, I'm talking about it as a Rebbe, and I hear it by the boys, so I imagine by the girls too. If there's any conversation about grades, about getting jobs, about getting into graduate schools, you just tune out. That's not your conversation. You don't want to talk about that. You don't talk about that. That's triggering jealousy. You know you have to go to graduate school, or you know you have to get a job. You don't talk about it. It's that obvious. You don't talk about other things, happy things. You know, we did this, we had some ice cream, whatever. Nice things. Don't talk about getting things or accomplishing things. Or I have to do what they did. It's just the whole topic is eventually going to damage. It gets a person into the jealous mode. Very, very important. I want to say that these two, I have 6 points I want to talk about, but these two, the tznius and the jealousy, a lifetime, truly lifetime, lifetime mitos, tovos, to be sameach b'chalkeinu and to have tznius. Now everybody obviously should and will get married. If a person has these two midos, the marriage is so much, gets off to him, has so much more going for it. If a woman is, the Gemara says it black and white, the Gemara says if a woman is tsanua bebesa, after she's married in the house, she has tsanius, she brings a bracha into the house. The Gemara has all kinds of stories about married women who were tsanua in the house, and all the blessings that came from Hashem gives big blessings. It also makes the relationship with her husband so much better, much, much better. So, developing tznius as a single girl, not only do you get the tremendous mitzvah now, but you're going to have a blessing to help you with your marriage. And then, this other thing I'm talking about not being jealous, not comparing yourself to other people, to be samecha, b'chalkech, to be happy with my chelik, is such a blessing for marriage. It's an incredible blessing for marriage. I mean, that you know, it's clear, I don't have to explain it, but if the spouse is jealous of other people, it wreaks havoc in a marriage. If the wife, let's say, she's jealous of other women, they have more than me, they have a bigger house, they have better furniture, a bigger car, better vacation, and she tells it to her husband, drives the guy, you know, you're basically battering his ego, making him feel bad, making him feel inadequate. He's a failure because his wife is unhappy with him. The whole purpose of marriage is that one person supports the other person. Okay, when you go into marriage, you're going to help him feel good. That's be the number one thing in your head. And when he gets into marriage, he's going to be number one in his head, supposed to be, he's there to make you feel good. It's not a combination of two people who are out there to conquer the world together. You know, they're jealous of other people and they want to beat other people, so two are better than one. Anyone who goes into marriage like that is a prescription for failure. The prescription for successful marriage is Samecha b'chalkeinu, we're happy with what we have. The wife is happy with what she has, and he's happy with what he has, and they're helping one another feel good. That's good marriage. Those marriages last forever. When each one is Samecha, 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 b'chalk, b'chalk. The worst of all the marriages which really need one-way street to divorce, is when one of the two people is very jealous of other people, and then continuously batters the spouse. You're not doing this, you're not doing that, this, that. Why? Because they have it. Why don't we have it? Anytime you do that, to kill your marriage. Now, I want to say something about that. You know, getting married is a big deal, especially for women. You have to get the skills. You get to have the marriage skills before you get into marriage. There's no such thing as on-the-job training in marriage. Okay, you can't get married then and learn what it means to be married. This I heard when I was a young boy. I was maybe 15 years old. I spent the summer once in Panovich Yeshiva. And there was a great mashgiach of Chatzka Levenstein. He was a mashgiach of the old Miri Yeshiva. And he gave a shmooze, and the boys were sitting there listening to the old man. He said, boys, you want to get married? Fix your midos now that you're single, and then you'll be happily married. Don't wait to fix your midos after you get married. That's too late. I remember he said, how do you expect to raise a child if you can't even raise yourself? That still rings in my head. How do you raise a child if you can't even manage yourself? If you know how to run your own life, then you can hopefully educate the child properly. If you're going to be consumed with jealousy, how are you going to raise a child? Children, you know, they're born jealous. You have to teach them how to share, how to give. But you yourself are jealous. How are you going to raise a child? That's what the Mashpiach said. But I want to, how are you going to possibly have a good marriage? If you're starting off every day unhappy, you know, I have this look, something's wrong in my life, I have to have to be approved. One-way ticket to disaster, one-way ticket. Believe me, and you have to work on this now. It's a critical trait. You must work on this now. And the way to work on this now is many different things. You have to think, have strategies. Maybe you have a little vat, or you discuss it with your friends. Work on it. How do I become smecha b'chalki? How do I learn to live and be happy with what God gave me? Not to look what other people have. Just forget about what other people have. I have to be happy with what God gave me. Period. And He gives me this husband, I'm happy with him. I'm not trying to make him better, that he should remake him. I'm happy with him the way he is, and I'm supporting him. Period. That's what makes good marriages. Someone goes in there and says, I'm not happy with what he is. I have to change him, improve him, forget it. One-way ticket. One-way ticket out of the marriage. So, and the tznius goes hand, because tznius means a person's inside. I'm looking inward, not outward. And looking inward is the key to be a samech b'chalki. And also, so tznius goes together with this. That's why I put these as one, two, because I think it's very, very much connected and very, very important for women. Extremely important. Work on it. So that's one, two, three. Tznius, jealousy. Three was marriage. Okay, so it's okay. Nothing wrong about marriage also. We'll talk about it here today because we're learning the Sechta Ksubot. There's a certain part of marriage which is completely overlooked and people are searching for a spouse. Unfortunately. And that's the day-to-day dough. Drudgery part of marriage. Okay, it's in the Mishnayos. Mishnayos say a woman, she's supposed to do the shopping and the cooking and feeding the baby and making beds. That's a chiyuv. Okay, when you date, a boy dates, I told my boys in the shit, I said, we have to learn that Mishnah. I figured it out. I say, when you date, is that how you search for your spouse? Is she gonna cook well? Is she gonna clean, do good laundry, make her bed nicely? Is she messy, slob, or is she neat? You don't have to think about it. You think about it, is she charming, is she beautiful, whatever, is she brilliant? But that's not the day-to-day, that's very good, that's part of it, okay? But day-to-day is a certain part of marriage, which is day-to-day, call what you want. Drudgery, routine, repetitive work, unexciting. Can people do that? Can people do that? I know marriages where the woman could not do it. I mean, he woke up maybe 2 weeks after marriage. Hey, my wife doesn't do anything. She doesn't clean, doesn't cook. My mommy did that. My mother used to clean. Do the laundry, cook. This girl doesn't want to do that. 6 months later, they're divorced. It happens all the time. All the time. And he could be the reverse. I mean, I'm talking to women, not to men, but he could be a slob. You really want to speak to his roommates if they'll tell you the honest truth, what it means to live with the boy, day to day. Not just that he's charming and he spends a lot of money on a date, he has a fancy car. Okay. Those are good things, but that's not the whole picture. You have to live with somebody. You know, the guy has to understand that his wife can make up in the morning. She's not always going to have makeup. These things are real. So, I just think that if you don't know how to cook, learn how to cook. Now. It's going to help your marriage. If you never cleaned up, if your roommates are cleaning up, tell them that for the next 5 weeks, you're cleaning up. They can take a vacation. You have to learn these day-to-day skills, because that's like the glue which makes the marriage work day-to-day. Okay. Okay, now another issue I want to talk about, number four, is the secular versus the religious. There's a divide here. Okay, it's a very hard question. How secular am I in terms of looking at things? There's a spread. Some people have more of a religious way of looking at things, more of a secular way. It's a big issue in Israel, secular religious divide. I mean, I would rather have more of a religious attitude on things and less secular. Just because I think it's safer, basically. It means that overall I'll probably do the right thing if I look at the religious angle more than the secular angle. But it's a give and take. It needs guidance. It needs guidance. Where do I look at something on a secular angle? Where do I look at a religious? I'd like to look at everything religiously, but some things maybe need more of a secular look at it. So you have to, it requires a lot of thinking from issue to issue about that. But I tell you this, as far as being a Rosh Yeshiva and being here for 50 plus years, there's always been a big tug of war between the secular and the religious sides of the education and the community and the lifestyles. And, as Rosh Yeshiva, we are on the religious side of this tug of war, so we're, I would say, the most liberal of all the Rosh Yeshivas in the world, but we're Rosh Yeshiva, so we are here to protect the religious Torah side. So, I know there are certain things which come up. You can trust us that if we say this is wrong, you go with us. Don't listen to the other people. If we say certain things are wrong, you should trust us. We're here. We're not coming from Panovich. We're in Yeshiva University. So we know what this world is. I've been here for 50 years and a lot of other rabbis. So if we say that something in this world is wrong, you should trust us. We know what we're saying. Okay, let's say a year ago or so, something came up about called partnership women, partnership in Yanin, where they took the women and let them be the chazan in the shul till Yishtabach. And Yishtabach, then a man takes over. It's called partnership dominion, I think. So we said, all the yeshivas, it was coming out of the Yeshiva University world, certain synagogues were doing it. But we said, we don't want that. That's it. You have to have a munas chachamim, that the great Rosh Yeshiva, when they draw that line and say something like that is wrong, just trust us that we know what we're saying. We're saying that if something like that we're saying is wrong, that means we're saying if it goes ahead, it could destroy the whole movement. Okay, you like the movement called Torah Mada, like the movement called Yeshiva University, you like that combination, then trust the experts on the Torah side that something that we say should not happen, just don't do it. We know that that has the potential of destroying everything. Okay, we don't want this. When you put together Torah Mada, there's a pull in both directions. We know from history that the mad, the secular side, could destroy the Torah side. It's done it many times in the past. Whether it was Reform Judaism or Conservative Judaism, they started off basically Orthodox, but they let the secular side get stronger and stronger. Or secular Zionism. The many movements were original Judeo-Christians, and there's a movement after movement. Let an outside force get stronger, stronger, until finally destroy the good side. So, we started this whole discussion here by saying that Torah Mada is good. as long as it's done the right way. But it could be perverted, ultimately destroyed, if the matter is not controlled by the Torah. You have to have the Torah as the controlling force, and the matter is a servant of the Torah. That the Rambam writes someplace, one of his writings, that outside studies are a servant of the Torah. Fine. But you can't, we're not going to let this outside way of thinking, culture, destroy, overwhelm and destroy the Torah side. So certain things come up, we let happen. We're letting it happen. But things that come up, we say, don't do that. We have to trust us, that we know what we're talking about. Some call them Munas Chachamim. We have to have a certain amount of faith in our Chachamim. That when they say certain things, yes and no, and they put their weight behind it, just have a Muna, you know. I had to have a moon in my Rebbe, the Rav, and he said certain things no, and other things yes, you know, a moon, whoever it is. But Rabbi Shechter, who's considered the great posek uptown, he says this is wrong, we follow him, because he put his weight behind that. It doesn't happen so often, once in a while, but if that happens, we have to follow it. The moon is chacham. We do have issues, but sometimes the secular and the Torah clashing, don't know what to do about it. Okay, but they came up 3-4 years ago and they changed the YU campus from being all boys, and they said girls will start coming up and have a co-ed campus. We could have said, as Rosh Yeshiva, absolutely not, we're not allowing it. But the Rosh Yeshiva let it happen. So there they've had a secular thing, a co-ed type campus atmosphere. They let it happen. Not that we necessarily asked for it, but we didn't stop it. So that meant that, okay, the secular side, a lot of boys and girls wanted co-ed encounters and places where they could meet. So instead of just having it in a little room in Stern College, so they let it happen in uptown also. I remember a number of years ago when they first made the Yom HaTzmaut, and why you co-ed, there used to be only boys. So, you know, we had a big issue. We sat down with the president, we discussed it with him, and at the end we let it happen. However, Purim, there was a couple of years they tried to make a co-ed Purim, and we said no. And it stopped. We said, Purim, no. Purim is too much of co-ed. We can't let co-ed and Purim. Some people are getting drunk, and the women are in costumes. Not enough sneeze. We're not going to let that. So we stopped it. There's no co-ed Purim the last 5 years. There used to be a few years. But we did allow co-ed lounges. So the Rosh Yeshiva, you know, we're aware of things. And we're making certain decisions. Either we let happen. But when we say this is wrong, so you have to have a munah that we know what we're talking about. We know that such a thing is a threat. A co-ed Purim is a threat to the existence of the place. Okay, it's boys and girls, some people get drunk, just wrong. Can't let it be. Co-ed Yom HaTzmaut. Yeah, for a while they wanted to put the Co-ed Yom HaTzmaut downstairs in the gym. And it was bad. They had all kinds of crazy things going on down there. We stopped and we said, Co-ed Yom HaTzmaut, we're letting outside. Where everybody sees what's going on. Nothing indoors, nothing downstairs. They had all kinds of funny things that people started to do down there. We don't want it. So they said, okay, fine. Well, she was came out strong. We don't have to put things in the newspaper. We spoke to people and let people know what we want. So they said, okay, let's listen to you. Our maximum co-ed is upstairs and in the tens of gardens. Nothing indoors. We're not going to let that. And so there's certain things when the Rosh Yeshiva, certain issues, when there's this tug of war comes out, we have to have a munah that the Rosh Yeshiva know what they're talking about. You have to have a munah chacham. There's also, by the way, very, very important for life. When you go through life, you get married, what is going to be? In every single religious issue, you and your husband or you yourself are going to disarm, it's a prescription for failure. There has to be certain issues that you can let your greater rabbi, that the greater Talmid Chacham, the rabbi is going to decide. You're going to decide every question. Women have hilchos need the questions. They're going to make a decision or they're going to ask the rabbi. You have a question on Shabbos. You're going to make your own decision or ask the rabbi. You have to get used to the concept that the things that you cannot decide, you have to ask the rabbi. It's a fundamental thing. You know, Shalavicha, V'yagetcha l'cha, you have to speak to the rabbi about things. I get phone calls every day, v'shachta, people speak to him. 10 hours a day with questions. So, you have to get used to this thing. I don't know everything. Sometimes the questions have a big ten. I would like it. I would like the halacha to be X. But I have to understand, I'm not the authority. I must get an authority to tell me I can do it. I have to go ask an authority. Very important thing. Shal avicha v'yagedcha lach. You have to ask the authority certain things. So, I don't know why I'm getting so pissed about it, but I think it's very important. It's a very important point to accept Torah authority on big issues. You have to accept the Torah authority. It's not with all this whole institution and the idea of Torah, how that people should think for yourselves. Okay, yes, up to a line. At a certain point, you stop thinking for yourself. You ask the question, and the Torah authority says yes or no, or maybe whatever he says. Okay, there has to be a point where I have to be able to, you know, surrender my independence to Torah authority. We cannot have it, otherwise it's going to destroy us. It'll destroy us. There never was, and there is no religious community of Jews which ever existed that did not have Torah authority to make the final decision on basic questions. Always was. There was the original fight of Korach against Moshe Rabbeinu. Korach said, "Kol ha'am kulam kadoshim." Every Jew can make his own decision. And God said, "No, Moshe makes that final decision, not Korach." And that's been since then always the same thing. Anytime Jews or good Jews say, "We'll make our own decision," they're just as walking out of Torah. That's a one-way exit. You have to accept the authority in certain things, whatever it is, whether we like it or not. Now, for example, I want to talk about this because I don't know. I'm not so into this because I don't have a smartphone. But they tell me that a lot of people, a lot of kids, are doing texting on Shabbos with the smartphone. Now, there is no... Okay, up to today, I don't know of any responsible Torah authority who allows it. Every responsible Torah authority that I've heard of up to today says it's a violation of Shabbos. And a person has to be able to give in to Torah authority on an issue like that. Hilchos Shabbos, and they're saying texting is prohibited, so it's prohibited. I remember my father used to be chain smoker. He smoked 2 packs a day. Never smoked on Shabbos, ever. But otherwise, he was a chain smoker. So I asked him, "What's Abba, how do you do this?" He said, "Well, Shabbos." I said, "Quite the Shabbos." He said, "The word Shabbos made him stop." So, the same thing. Why is texting more of an addiction than smoking? Okay, it is an addiction. Fine. An addict who's from stop smoking on Shabbos. He's addicted. Same chemicals going through his brain. I have to smoke. Can't stop. Shabbos, he stops. So texting is the same thing. So you're addicted. You have a texting addiction. Stop on Shabbos. Where it has to be. What goes to this point of accepting Torah authority at the final, whether I like it or not? Okay, it doesn't mean I like what they're saying. But I have a choice. That's my commitment. To be committed to this bottom line that certain things the authority says no, it's no. Period. That's it. Okay. The last couple of things I speak about is Avos Yisrael. Now, Avos Yisrael is a, you know, we're a big problem. Sinas Yisrael has destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, and Sinas Yisrael is keeping Mashiach from coming. So we have to have more Avas Yisrael, more love for other Jews now. Whenever you deal with another Jew, always think about the good things in that Jew. Any girl you see, any person you see, always look at them with an eye in Tovah. See the good thing in the person. Every person has something good. Every Jew has something good. When you look at somebody, look at the good thing that they have. Okay? If they don't know anything, good. So that's good, because now, despite not knowing anything, they do some good things. And then I think about what they will be when they do know good, when they know more. So I have an image of what they will be. The Chachamim say that Hashem will give blessings to people based upon what they will be in the future. Yeah. Not just Moshe Rabbeinu, when he killed that Mitzri for even Kol V'chol, says he looked at all the future generations, would there be something good? If there would, he wouldn't be able to kill him, because the future would protect the present. So it's Hashem works that way. So when I look at another Jew, another person, I look at even if I can't think of anything good today, I'll say, well, there's a potential to have good down the road. So that makes me have Ayin Tovah. I always have to have the Ayin Tovah. I cannot have the Ayin Ra. The only way to fix this Sinat Chinam, which is destroying everything which we've had, the base of Mikdash, and kept us in Golos all the years, and is still, you know, wreaking havoc in the state of Israel, all that Sinat Chinam between people and groups. It all comes from Ayin Ra. When you look at somebody, you have a choice. I can have a critical, negative look, or I can have a positive, optimistic look. It's my decision. I have two eyes. I can make a good eye or a bad eye. So, you have to work on the good eye. And finally, the last thing I want to mention is Eretz Yisrael. It's a big, big issue. You know, we should really, everybody has to think about it very seriously, moving to Eretz Yisrael. We really should, for many reasons. First of all, the mitzvah. Second of all, the history. Third of all, it's the most exciting thing happening to Jews in the world. And fourth of all, if you're smart, you know that every single exile of Jews has ended in expulsion. It's happening now in Ukraine, France. It doesn't stop. It just keeps on going. One country after the next, for one reason or other, Jews run away. Either it's legally they're expelled, or it's just impossible to live there. Like today in France, so people leave. So how long, you know, and there's a hindsight, you say, oh, well, why didn't they leave 20 years ago? Why don't you leave America today? Why 50 years from now, some say, how come American Jews didn't leave? Didn't they see the handwriting on the wall? So, I mean, that's also a thing to think about. You know, there's nothing, I don't accept the theory that America is different than any other country in the world. I just think it's been a great country for us, and I definitely appreciate the very loyal Americans. But what about the future? I don't know. I have no reason to think that this country in the long run will be better than any other country in the world, which turned out to be not a good place for Jews to stay, whether it was Russia, Poland, today's France, obviously Germany, Iraq. Imagine if Jews would still be living in Iraq. there wouldn't be one left, and ISIS would kill every single one. Or Jews are living in Syria today. Thank God the Jews of Syria and Iraq left about 25 years ago. Today, okay, no one's being murdered. So, I know there's such so many, maybe 100 plus countries from which Jews have fled to wind up in Israel, that for someone to say, my country is different, America, Canada, Mexico, these countries are different. North and South Hemisphere, this is going to be... You look at the South Hemisphere, plenty of countries there are terrible for Jews today. Argentina, terrible. Venezuela, terrible. Almost all the Jews have left. These are huge countries. Venezuela, Argentina, huge countries. How many people they have, but huge, 70 million each, 80 million, huge amount. Jews are very well off in these countries. Gone. They're gone. Can't stay there. It's only a few hours away by a plane. It's in the Southern Hemisphere. Okay, thank God. The United States is still very good. Canada is very good. For someone to say, I'm worrying about it forever. This is going to be great. I don't see it. To me, a wise person has at least a house in Israel. At least. If you live in America, okay, but take your savings and buy something in Israel. I don't care where you buy. Buy in Tzfat, buy in Malot, buy someplace. Buy a shack, buy a little hut, but you have a place to be. It doesn't make any sense. You know, the French Jews, they have big problems. They have no place to go in Israel. No place to go. Ukrainian Jews, forget about it. I don't know where they're putting them. They're coming in penniless, they have nothing. 9,000 Jews just came from the Ukraine the last few months, have nothing. Anyway, it's a negative thought, but this negative thought happens to be, I think, somewhat warranted if you look at the last 70, 80 years of Jewish history. It's Vicky Batsi Etchem, Abakan Fatahavetz. So someone's going to just say, I'm ignoring Israel. It was nice, I spent a year in seminary there, fine. That'll be the last time I'll be there till my son's bat mitzvah. My daughter's bat mitzvah. And then I'll come back and finish. And I'm sorry, I don't think it's being wise. Anyway, but the mitzvah of living in this little more positive is a tremendous mitzvah. And you can be part of Jewish history. Obviously, it's the future. It's the future. It's already 6 million Jews. It has half the world Jews. America only has 3 million Jews left. It's twice the size of America, the Jewish population. If you have a chance, try to be part of it, part of this thing. I mean, I have one of my best boys. He's been in my shir now for 4 years. He's graduated in a few weeks, and he's going to Israel. From Aliyah. So he's the best idea. I have a lot of boys who went to Israel. A lot. And they do well. They do well. So, put it into the options. Something to think about. Don't just make believe there's no Israel. There's only 34th Street in Macy's. There's other things. Okay, I spoke my piece. And any questions about anything you happen to... Okay, I touched all the bases. No one's angry. No one's going to hang me from a tree. Okay. It could go on YU Torah. No one's going to write a nasty email. I said, okay. Shabbat Shalom. Have a good week. Thank you.